You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
So stand by. We're going to get David Gray on the line. We'll be right back with you, talented people.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
All right, good afternoon. It's talented people here for our second hour of shows. It's 4 o'clock on September 23rd. Hope you're having a great day. Colleen Kelly, my business partner at Mariah Media, is in studio. And our caller on the line is David Gray. He is an author. He is the executive director of the Pennsylvania Ballet. He is an expert on nonprofits. He's known across the country. And so welcome to the show, David.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here calling in. Why don't you take a couple seconds to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, gosh. Where to begin? I work in nonprofits. That's what I do now, but I've had a rather eclectic background. I, after college, was writing plays and bartending in New York and then did some work in nonprofits and then ended up in finance and became a certified financial planner. And then quite accidentally became the executive director of a struggling arts group. And I've been working as an itinerant interim executive director mostly ever since. Wherever there's trouble in the nonprofit land, I ride in on my white horse and try to fix it.
Aww.
And then I'd usually ride out as fast as I can so that everyone can be angry at me for what I've done. But as long as they're set up for success after I leave, that's the good part.
That's a great story. So, okay, give us a little bit of give us some specifics on that. And we know that you have the funniest video out there on YouTube about nonprofits and so on.
Oh,
we
God.
Were laughing so hard about watching you. You are an entertainer, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to advertise that aspect of it any longer, but yes, I did write a song called The Nonprofit Lament. I was asked to speak to a group of young nonprofit professionals. And I thought if I, go and harangue them for an hour and 20 minutes about nonprofit finance, they might not have as much fun as they thought they would. So I wrote a little song in their honor, remembering my early days in the nonprofit world, how poorly it paid and how doing good often didn't feel so good for yourself. But
It's great.
It's well done.
It really is. You're so funny. And, we also know about your Christmas one with your kids and stuff. You're so, so cute with your family.
Well, serious things happen in life. And, and when those times come, be miserable all you want, but you don't have to be miserable all the time.
Right.
And so in my work, I try to keep that in mind. I mean, there's no reason that everyone coming to work has to be miserable all the time. I try to create an environment where people actually maybe enjoy where they're working, which doesn't mean we don't work hard. It just means that you have to offset that by blowing off some steam now and then. And if you can't laugh at yourself, well, everyone else is laughing at you, so you might as well get on the bandwagon.
That sounds good.
That is true. So what is can you tell us what kind of things you have going on with the Pennsylvania Ballet now? Do you have any exciting projects or programs?
Oh, gosh, lots going on. Well, it's a year ago, a little more than a year ago, the organization was going through some strategic planning, and the artistic director announced that he was going to retire, and the executive director also found another job that he was interested in Miami. And so they were rather quickly in need of an interim executive director. They wisely thought that For an arts organization, it's really important that you get the artistic director right. That's where the excitement is. That's the person who's supposed to be generating the real buzz and excitement. And so that the administrative leader who would be partnered with the artistic director, I think their feeling was, well, let's get the artistic director higher right, and then we'll figure out who can be the administrative person. But in the meantime, we need someone to make sure that the checks don't bounce and the bills get paid. And I had been working as an itinerant interim executive director for a while. And I got the call, so I came in as the interim. But I've been in and around dance for about 25 years. I was a press director at New York City Ballet earlier in my career, and married one of the ballerinas. So for 25 years now, I've literally been married to the ballet. Have a dance studio in my house, and so as much as I have worked in other fields, dance is a very small world, so it's hard to, it's like the mafia, you know, they keep sucking you back in. So when they hired the artistic director, Angel Correa, who has had a phenomenal career, he was a star at American Ballet Theatre's, danced all over the world. This is someone I knew because he had at one point been invited to dance in New York at the New York City Ballet where my wife was dancing, and we all got to know each other. So when they announced that Angel was going to be the director, I thought it was kind of amusing. It was sort of, you know, old home week, and Angel is a great guy. He's easygoing, and this is a very big deal in our business because not every ego in the arts world is easy to work with. And Angel, God bless him, he ran his own company in Spain for a number of years, and it was a struggle. I mean, there really isn't a lot of arts funding in Spain, and you know, they've had their own financial challenges. So he understands when he comes to me and says, oh, you know, I want to do this big project. And I say, that's great. In about 3 years, we'll have enough money to do it. He, you know, he doesn't give me a lot of agita. He goes, okay, so let's put it on the calendar for 2020. So what are we going to do? You know, I mean, it's just, it's a great, he's a great person to work with. And he's great with the dancers. But so what's happening here is, you know, he's bringing this new repertory and new excitement to the company that frankly, needed as a sort of, you know, a little boost of energy and adrenaline. And on the administrative side, you know, I'm trying to do the same thing with the staff to make sure that we can, you know, come up with a sustainable model of support that ensures we can keep, you know, performing these great works for a great audience.
So where does the Pennsylvania perform? Do you perform at the Merriam or
Most of our shows are at the Academy of Music here in Philly, and then we do two series at the Merriam Theater right next door to the Academy. And then we also do some touring, which I think I'm not supposed to tell people where we're going, although I would hint that if you took the train in the other direction from, you know, if you live in New Jersey, then you might find yourself in a big city where we also will be performing.
That's exciting.
Hint, hint.
It is indeed. It is indeed.
And what a beautiful theater the Merriam Theater is.
Well, the Merriam could use some work, but the Academy of Music is stunning. The Academy, you know, it's actually owned by the orchestra. They did lots of renovation to it. And it's, I mean, the chandelier apparently was sent back to France to be, I mean, it's beautiful. It's absolutely stunning. And it's funny, we had, when you do a new ballet, or not so much a new ballet, but a ballet that, you know, has been done elsewhere, we have to bring over what's called a repetiteur, the person who, you know, maybe studied it in Paris and will now teach our dancers how to do it. And every one of them, when they walk into that theater, they feel like they're back in Paris. It's just, you know, such a wonderful sort of old world scene. Now, having said that, you know, could the seats be more comfortable? Could we do, you know, there are lots of things that you could change if you, you know, if you had money. But you know what? It's still a beautiful place.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, it is.
So, do you have programs for young, up and coming?
Well, there's sort of three programmatic areas for this organization. We have the professional dance company that performs these, you know, great works, you know, ranging from Nutcracker to Don Quixote, and then, you know, more, you know, Balanchine works and others in the theaters. We have a school, the School of the Pennsylvania Ballet. It's in its fourth year, and that's really a professional training academy. We do have classes for what we call pre-ballet for the youngest kids. And that's for, you know, whoever wants to show up. And then, you know, once they get, I think it's about age 8, then they have to audition to actually, you know, come into the school where we look to, you know, really train professional dancers. It's not, you know, it's not really the after-school activity that, oh, isn't that fun. This is about kids who are really aspiring to be professional dancers. And I think we have about 130 kids in the program right now. And then we do community engagement programs, mostly here in Philadelphia, but, you know, throughout the area that are really geared towards creating opportunities for kids to experience dance who may not otherwise get to do it in a structured way. So we're in a number of the Philadelphia public schools. We teach dance to, we have a program called Dance Chance. We teach first graders in and around the city once a week in their school, and then for kids who show some interest in continuing to pursue their scholarship into our school so that they have an opportunity to continue dancing. We have another program that's for middle school kids, an after-school program, which is not dissimilar, where we have after-school dance, and then they get to perform at the end of the year. So there's a range of things we do. I mean, what I tell people, as a manager when I got here, I said there are basically three things that I will use to sort of be the matrix by which all decisions are made. And the first is the word, the dream business, dreams of dance. So what you see on the stage of the professional dancers, many of us can only dream about what we're seeing. For many of the dancers, it's a dream come true to dance the roles they dance. The second piece is accountability. This organization has had some history of perhaps not always being accountable. So they'd say they would do things and they didn't get them done. Donors that maybe felt that their wishes hadn't been honored, things like that. And my feeling was, look, we have to be accountable. We do what we say we're going to do, or we own it when we don't. And, that's just the way it's going to be. And then finally, the biggest thing is, we're in the customer service business. And I was stunned when I got here. This is October a year ago, was the first series of performances, and they gave me this little, name tag. And I was in the theater, I put the name tag on, and I was heading out to the lobby. And one of the staff said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to the lobby to greet the patrons." They said, but you have your name tag on." I said, yes, that's so people know who I am. They said, "But people could complain to you." I said, "Well, they complained. I should probably hear it."
Right,
and I said,
right.
"I have a better idea. Put your name tag on and get out there with me." I was stunned. I mean, the notion that we were going to ignore the patrons was mind-boggling, and it was a mindset. And this is not uncommon for organizations I typically get called into. When an organization gets in trouble, the focus becomes very internal. What do we need? What do we want to sell? What do we need? What do we want the donor to do? And when the focus should be, what are the customers' needs? What is it that the donor needs from us? What would make them feel engaged? And people weren't asking those questions. And so, I go to the lobby before every performance and greet the patrons. And guess what? Sometimes they complain. And that's okay. I can't fix it if I don't know what's the problem. And oftentimes, there are complaints I can't, when someone says to me, the seats in the Miriam Theater are uncomfortable. Well, there's not a lot I can do about that.
Right.
I don't own the theater, and the people who own the theater don't have the money to change it. But oftentimes, people just want to be heard. And so, if that's part of my job, then I got to hear it. So, trying to get folks focused on those sort of, those three elements. When people bring me, when I got here, they were doing something that they called Nutcracker Market, and it was a like a craft fair as a fundraiser. But somehow they were, it's a long story, but they were losing money doing it. Space wasn't big enough, And I said, look, whose dream is being fulfilled by us having a market? Is there some dream of dance here that's being fulfilled by that? And the answer was not really. So, we had to, look at that and think, is this, essential to our mission, or are we just, sort of scrambling all over the place where we don't need to be? So we really had to make adjustments.
And that is why they brought you in.
Well, what typically happens is an interim when you know you're not staying. And in fact, there's a program that was run out of New York where they place interims, and they specifically do it and are clear that you cannot stay, you can't apply for the full-time job. The goal is, you're there to fix a problem. You're there to fix a situation. And ideally, you have to be able to do and say whatever is needed. And sometimes that's ugly. Sometimes you have to tell the board that, they're idiots, or sometimes you have to fire half the staff. And the challenge is if you're vying for the job, you may not have the chutzpah to do what needs to be done. And these people hire you specifically because they want you to do what needs to be done, and they may want to hate you when you leave, and that's okay. That's why I say the goal is to set them up for success so that when they hire the full-time executive director, that person, can be successful because you fired the people that were not going to make, who weren't going to be useful. Now, it's a little different here because they asked me to stay and I was foolish enough to say yes. So now it's, I've stirred the pot. Now I actually have to make the soup.
That's great. That's so funny. Well, time for our first break here. It's 4:15 already on September 23rd. You're listening to a conversation on Talented People. Colleen Kelly's co-hosting in the studio here with our guest, David Gray from the Pennsylvania Ballet, an expert on nonprofits, talking about some information that you're going to want to know about. We'll be right back.
Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
What can you do as a member of Rotary? You can eradicate polio. You can promote peace. You can feed the hungry. You can help children do better in school. Because Rotary believes that by working together, you can do anything. This is District Governor Megan Jones Holt. Learn more about Rotary and join me every Monday at 11 a.m. on the Rotary Hour, the show that is dedicated to answering the ultimate question of what Rotary is. Find us on the web at rotarynj.org. Rotary, humanity in motion.
If you're looking to get in front of thousands of new customers, connect with your current customers, you don't want to miss out on the largest business show in Hunterdon County. The 27th annual Hunterdon County Business and Home Expo, coming up on a new date, Thursday, November 5th, in a new location at Hunterdon Central High School in Flemington at the Fieldhouse in Common from 2 to 7 p.m. You surely want to sign up. You surely want to exhibit. Something you don't want to miss. Contact the Chamber at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at HunterdonChamber.org.
All right, welcome back to the show. It's Talented People, 418. Colleen and I were laughing. We think we're going to start a show that's called It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere at 4 O'Clock and have wine or something because we're like antsy to get out of here. But we are so enjoying our conversation with David Gray, who's on the call from Pennsylvania Ballet. He's the nonprofit executive and expert. And David, are you there?
I am still here.
Oh, so glad. We are so much getting a kick. If you heard Colleen laughing there a couple seconds ago on the break there, just talking, you know, listening to you talk. You're so entertaining. And we want everybody to know that you are one of the featured speakers at the event coming up again at the Palace called Lessons from the Leaders, a best practices nonprofit event. There's obviously we want for-profits there to be networking with our nonprofit guests, but it's on the 8th of October at the Palace at Somerset Park. We start with keynote by Michelle Sikirka in the morning and end with Steve Califer of Hunterdon County. He's the chairman of the Somerset Patriots, also philanthropist, award-winning filmmaker, and owner of Flemington Car and Truck Country. And then David Gray's in the middle there. He's going to be talking about nonprofit tips, trends, information. You were talking about entrepreneurial philanthropy, which I can't wait to hear what exactly that is. But we want to ask you, David, if you could talk for a few seconds. And again, if anybody wants to sign up, registration is available now. You can go on Eventbrite. You can go to Mariah with two R's, M-A-R-R-I-A-H, Media. If you're a for-profit and you want to bring a guest nonprofit, you can register that way. You can come in either way. And you can do that, again, at Eventbrite directly or through Mariah Media. David, can you talk about the nonprofit life cycles, something that you mentioned? And we want to hear a little bit about that.
Sure. The basic concept is that organizations, you know, like people, develop in different ways. So there are various elements of organizational life, and they typically have a life cycle in the nonprofit arena. And there are a number of different writers who have sort of embraced this concept. So, you know, you could read a book and not see exactly the same words I'm going to use, but they're very similar. And the notion is, if someone gets an idea, it's a startup, then, you know, they get past the idea phase and they actually start the nonprofit. Then if things go well, there's a growth phase where you develop your programs and people are excited and they want to be a part of it. Things get to a point of maturity and you're sort of firing on all cylinders. And then there might come a time where there is a decline, where perhaps you're not as sharp or as in demand as you once were. And then the organization might either, you know, go into its demise, or it might have a turnaround and sort of return to an earlier phase, or, you know, ideally get back to sort of a growth phase. And what was intriguing when I first was introduced to this concept was that, you know, you liken it to people. And at the time, I had a 13-year-old son who physically was perfectly capable of driving a car, but one would argue sort of emotionally was maybe not in a place where you'd want to entrust him to do so. And that was intriguing to me because, you know, organizations go through the same thing. Typically, the people who start them have a passion for a cause. I keep saying, you know, I've never met a group that said, let's build the best damn administrative infrastructure you've ever seen, and then we'll find a cause. We find a cause, and we go out and we try to, you know, cure something or help people or do something. And only afterwards, you know, as we start to grow and we run our programs, do we realize that maybe we don't have the infrastructure to sustain what we're doing. And that's when we start to ask the questions, you know, is the board the right board, or are the staff the right staff? And we go back and we ask the questions. And so, you know, the equivalent would be if my 13-year-old got behind the wheel, yes, he knows how it works. But, you know, emotionally, was he ready to be doing what is asked of him? And so, you know, when you start to understand these sort of life cycle concepts, it's a really helpful way to start to diagnose issues in an organization, because oftentimes, without some kind of framework like the life cycle concept, people walk in and they start thinking, if there's a problem, well, if there's a problem because, you know, David's not experienced or David doesn't know what he's doing. Well, maybe the problem isn't David. Maybe the problem is that we're at a stage in life cycle where the skill set that's at the table is not the right skill set. And, you know, there's a woman, Suzanne Kenny Stevens, who's written one of these books, and she tells a great story in her book about a woman who had been a corporate assistant to, you know, working in a Fortune 500 company. And, you know, when she could retire early with these wonderful benefits, and she thought, you know, I'll go work for a nonprofit. I'll go do some good now, that, you know, because she could afford to work for very little money. She had a pension, all this stuff. So she goes to work to this inner-city organization, and, you know, she shows up on Monday, and they show her her desk, and they give her the tour, and she sits down at her desk, and then she goes out for lunch, and she never comes back. And they call her, and they said, what happened? And she said, you don't have air conditioning. And they said, no, we don't. You know, we're a scrappy little startup at a crappy downtown location. She goes, you can't expect me to go to work every day without air conditioning. And the point of the story is not that, you know, there's nothing wrong with this person. It's simply that, you know, she was used to, and her understanding of work was based on a mature organization with all this infrastructure and all this support that a, you know, a young, scrabbly startup nonprofit didn't have. You know, she might have been, if she'd gone to, you know, a big organization, a hospital or the Red Cross, she might have been an ideal fit. But not understanding the range of the life cycle stage of what she'd gotten into, you know, she was the wrong person at the time. And, you know, now, you know, people ask me, you know, to serve on boards or to get involved with nonprofits, and I'm thrilled I have a contract now that says I can't. But if I were to do it, I always tell people, you know, if it's a startup, you don't want me. You know, I'm not going to your theater and folding programs and cleaning bathrooms between shows. I'm not going to do it anymore. It's not. You know, there are other people who can put in that kind of time and feel a passion for it. I'm not that guy. You want someone to come to a finance committee, argue about spreadsheets, and, you know, whether, you know, it's $13 million or $13.1 million, you know, that interests me. But, you know, you need to know where your skill set fits in the life cycle of an organization.
Absolutely.
Can I ask a question about, like, say if I'm new nonprofits, when they're selecting or asking people to be on their board, is there a number of board members that they should be targeting? Or, you know, I know diversity is a good thing, but...
Well, I mean, I have very mixed feelings on this topic, and I have often said in my presentations and when I teach that board service and jury duty are the two places where the most ignorant person gets to have an opinion that counts. And that's not very kind of board members. And, of course, at the Pennsylvania Valley, that's not true at all. They're all my board members.
Of course, but not true there.
No, they're all wonderful, every one of them. But the point being, you know, how many should you have? I mean, the law requires that you have three. So that's the starting point. You have to have three. That's, you know, so there's your minimum. As many as are useful, I guess, is my answer. I'm not a fan of big boards for the sake of having big boards, because they take a lot of time and energy to manage. And if you're not going to be effective at that, you're going to have board members who feel that they're perhaps not being, you know, suitably utilized, or, you know, they're under-engaged in the process and the like. So, you know, the care and feeding of board members is a serious business. But I know people get in their heads, oh, well, you know, if every board member gives $1,000 and I have 100 board members, I'd have $100,000. Well, maybe.
Right.
You know, but, you know, that's a lot of care and feeding. So, you know, at a startup, you're typically looking for people who are really going to be hands-on. you know, and the sweat equity types, the folks who will fold the programs and clean the bathrooms for teen shows. And so, you know, it's important to understand sort of where you are and what skill set you need. But there's also going to be a point when you're going to need to change that. I mean, I was at an organization, a different dance organization some years ago, and I had a number of board members who seemed perpetually dissatisfied. And I, you know, when I finally got them to talk about it, they said, you know, this was so much more fun when our daughters were dancing on stage and we were sewing the costumes. And, you know, and there was a time when maybe that was a board member role, but the organization had evolved. The budget was $3 million. The union, you know, all the people sewing the costumes are members of unions. It's, you know, the organization had evolved and the board members hadn't. And, you know, it was a challenging dialogue to talk about, you know, what was the currently appropriate role of board members, and was that something that they were going to find fulfilling or not? And, you know, there's no shame in leaving a board if the time comes.
I love the way you said that. I wrote it down, perpetually dissatisfied. I think that's great. Okay, I want to see if the website URL is available. But I want you to know out there, people listening at your desks, you know, you may have a boss or work with people who are perpetually dissatisfied. It's like, oh my goodness, whose problem is that? Theirs. All right, we're going to go to our break here. It's 4:27 on Wednesday. Love it. Love it. So great to have you on the call there, David Gray, with the Pennsylvania Ballet, talking about nonprofits and just giving us his amazing insight. We'll be right back. And don't forget to go online and look up The Palace at Somerset Park, best practices with a whole slew of experts coming up on October 8th. We'll be right back.
This is USA Headline News. I'm Melody Burkett. There's apparently more to the latest flap between Donald Trump and Fox News. The network said it canceled Trump's scheduled appearance on today's The O'Reilly Factor before the billionaire announced his boycott of Fox News. The network accused the Republican presidential frontrunner of creating yet another distraction from any real issues he might be questioned about. Earlier today, Trump posted a message on Twitter saying he will not be doing any more Fox shows for the foreseeable future. Trump also accused Fox News of treating him very unfairly. With only days to go before a possible government shutdown, presidential spokesman Josh Earnest says it's time for Republicans to sit down with Democrats and figure something out. The federal government runs out of money at month's end without a bipartisan agreement to extend funding. Some Republicans want to link budget talks with efforts to defund Planned Parenthood, a non-starter for Democrats. For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
Musicians, singer-songwriters, whether you're creating new music, recording, or performing live, now through Sunday at Guitar Center, save up to 20% on select gear to bring out your best. Like the inspiring tone of a Martin acoustic electric guitar, just $449. Select a Dario acoustic guitar strings, buy one, get one free. Or an acoustic amplifier with digital FX for both guitar and vocals, just $129. This weekend is your chance to save on everything you need to make music. Guitar Center's singer-songwriter savings is going on now. Don't miss it.
Welcome to Staples.
Hi, Staples guy. My office computers are running really slow. Do you?
Staples has the latest Windows 10 devices. They're lightning fast.
But I want
a great deal. Right now, get up to $250 off select laptops, desktops, and 2-in-1 PCs with Windows 10.
Wow, and do you have plans?
No, actually, I'm free.
I meant tech service plans.
Yes, we do, and I'm still free.
Get more tech for up to $250 less. Staples, make more happen.
Offer ends 9/26, valid in-store and online while supplies last.
The head of Volkswagen is stepping down. CEO Martin Winterkorn announced his resignation today, days after it was revealed the German automaker was rigging diesel cars to cheat on emissions tests. The company said that 11 million of its diesel cars included software that allowed them to detect when they were being tested and then alter the engines to conceal true emissions levels. The man who hasn't yet decided if he's running is actually gaining ground in the latest Democratic presidential poll. The results of a Bloomberg politics poll out today show Vice President Joe Biden has 25% support of registered Democrats, even as he continues to decide whether to enter the race. Hillary Clinton remains first with 33%, and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is in third with 24%. The company responsible for a 5,000% price increase of a drug used by AIDS and cancer patients is lowering the price. Turing Pharmaceuticals CEO Martin Shkreli says they will substantially drop the price after complaints from medical groups and others. For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
A scientist at the University of Utah thinks there could be a connection between air pollution and Alzheimer's disease. Dr. Dustin Hammers says air pollution leads to inflammation throughout the body and could make its way to the brain.
That inflammation that happens in the body happens in the brain, and that can damage cells, and for older adults may be playing a role speeding up the process of something like Alzheimer's disease.
Dr. Hammers is studying a group of seniors to see how their brain function is affected by bad air days. Results of the study could be used to pursue laws to help control air quality. Federal immigration agents are once again allowed back at Los Angeles County jails to find deportable inmates. The new policy announced by Sheriff Jim McDonnell allows ICE agents back inside jails, but only to interview inmates who have committed what are considered to be serious crimes and are not protected by the California Trust Act. Jail officials will also be able to notify ICE agents up to 7 days before certain inmates are to be released so they can be picked up upon release and have deportation proceedings begin. The new policy is already under fire from immigration advocates who say it'll lead to racial profiling. The new Buick Cascada arrives in dealer showrooms early next year. It's the first convertible sold by Buick in over 25 years and will feature a roof that'll lower in under 20 seconds. The Cascada is a four-seat vehicle aimed at a market that includes the Audi A3 Cabriolet. The starting price of just under $34,000 will include the destination charge. For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
Welcome back to the show. It's Talented People, 4:33 on September 23rd. Hope you're having a great day. I'm Jeannie Murphy. Colleen Kelly's here with me, co-hosting from Mariah Media. We are talking about an upcoming event called the Best Practices for Nonprofits being held at the Palace at Somerset Park on October 8th, brought to you by Unity Bank. Community Unity Bank is what we call them. They're so dedicated to the nonprofits across the state of New Jersey and part of the like Eastern Pennsylvania, Phillipsburg area, Pennsylvania, Allentown. So if you're listening out there and you want to join us on that day, you can look on Mariah with two R's, M-A-R-R-I-A-H Media. You'll see Michelle Sakurka. She's the president and CEO of the New Jersey Business and Industry Association. Keynoting in the morning, and Steve Califer here from Hunterdon County. He's going to be presenting the afternoon keynote. In the middle there, our expert, David Gray, who's called in from the Pennsylvania Ballet, he's going to be doing a featured presentation on trends for nonprofits.
And we really, really appreciate you being part of this event, David, because of what you're going to bring to it.
Oh my God, we're just laughing right now, just you know, thinking about people out there listening and just learning so much. Can I ask you, yesterday you had mentioned we were reading and it was a term called entrepreneurial philanthropy. What does that mean?
What does it mean? I think that one of the trends, and New Jersey, you know, had an interesting experience with this not long ago when, you know, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, you know, offered $100 million to fix the Newark public schools. Where and he is, you know, exemplifies, you know, a range of folks, you know, from the venture capital and IT worlds who are approaching, you know, social challenges, you know, with an entrepreneurial mindset different from perhaps the more traditional social service mindset, you know, and you know, on the one sort of very simple version is, you know, folks saying, you know, bringing business skills to these challenges. But I think that there's more to it than that. I think there's more of a sense of, you know, trying to use the skills of, you know, looking for measurable results, looking for, you know, ways that we can substantially make change and then, you know, scale up the process. So I think the fantasy had been, you know, once we fix the Newark schools, we'll have a model for how to go fix everything else. And, you know, which is not dissimilar to the way that, you know, startups in Silicon Valley, you know, will tell you, you know, we're going to build an app and we're going to prove that, you know, people will use an app to get a car to come meet them here in San Francisco. And next thing you know, you have worldwide Uber. And I think there's this fantasy that you know, social issues with the, you know, when faced by these entrepreneurs with this different set of skills will, you know, suddenly cease to be intractable and, you know, we'll be able to fix everything a lot easier. Now, I mean, obviously, I'm saying this, you know, with a certain level of cynicism, and I shouldn't be quite so, you know, unkind. I mean, there are many, many challenges, you know, in Newark or anywhere else, frankly, where people are trying to address, you know, challenging issues. And I don't think that, you know, anyone has a magic bullet. I mean, I absolutely believe that there are ways, and I'm obviously one of those folks who believes that, you know, certain elements of my financial or business background are useful in nonprofits and the arts in ways that folks who have just the social service background, you know, the programmatic side may or may not have those skills. So I don't mean to be totally, you know, negative about it. But then at the same time, I live in a world where, you know, I have a development team that comes to me and says, you know, this funder wants to know what the measurable results were of our last program. And, you know, what did I measure? How many kids liked Nutcracker? Is that really a measurable? You know, is there some way for me to quantify a family tradition that this is a part of? You know, do I want to count the number of smiles of the children leaving the theater? I mean, you know, some of it gets to be silly. And it's a real challenge in the nonprofit arena. How do you, you know, when you're measuring what matters, what exactly should that be? You know, the arts may be one extreme version, but it's equally true in the social service sector. You know, what are the things that you would measure? You know, and for a time I was interim executive director of the New Jersey Coalition Against Sexual Assault. You know, this is an organization, sort of the spokes organization for the 21, you know, rape crisis centers, county rape crisis centers. I mean, this is, you know, this is not joking. This is serious business. And, you know, the notion that, you know, what do you measure? Well, do you measure, you know, how quickly or what kind of services we provided to survivors? Or is it, you know, is the, should the measurable be more about the policy changes that we're, you know, implementing that would actually change the treatment of survivors, you know, in the legal system? And, you know, how do you measure that? So those are the kinds of things where I think, you know, I think it's great that people want to bring, you know, responsible business acumen to any business in the nonprofit world. But I don't know that, you know, it necessarily means we're going to magically fix it all. So, you know, but it's a healthy dialogue, but it's a challenge. And I think, you know, the example in Newark, and in fact, forgive me, I'm not going to remember the name, but someone's just written a book about this. You know, there were many ways that the issue was approached that maybe led to, you know, a unsuccessful outcome. You know, it may be that the issues of poverty, you know, and schools being one of them is, you know, is way bigger than what one check is ever going to fix. You know, so that they're very complicated issues that don't necessarily lend themselves to simple, you know, the simple approach of an entrepreneur saying, I know how to fix this. And you know, God bless them for trying, but, you know, I think it's something where the wise folks are teaming, you know, I mean, you look at folks like Bill Gates who are, you know, finding issues, but also finding smart people in those fields to help, you know, resolve those issues, not just from the top down, but from the bottom up as well.
Wow, that is so serious to think about. I'm thinking of it from a couple different things, because I'm just learning about these levels and so on, but it, and you bring in so much information. You know, for the sake of the organization that actually has got the funders, right? And you think about the decisions that those funders have to make because it's such a competitive place. I mean, they're, my goodness, they're probably approached literally 24/7 to fund different things, small organizations, big organizations. So then they do have, I guess, the right to say, I would like to have some measurable results, right? Or measurable,
oh, sure,
you know,
sure.
What I mean? It makes total sense. You know, you don't think about it. The reason I bring it up is just because of, we were having a conversation the other day, Colleen and I, we also had been out and we were talking to some community business owners, and, you know, these are small business owners, not like what you're talking about, Bill Gates and so on, who just, the amount of money and the amount of generosity and the decisions that they must make. And then, thankfully, like you even mentioned, for them to have the ability to appoint some experts to come in and actually be there to modify and help those measurable results happen. I love that. Right. Then you look at the other side of the world where it's like these owners of Main Street type Flemington, where they're hit up every hour of the day for a donation from a small, another one, a community thing. You know, they can't ask for measurable results, but they also have to find a way to make decisions on what they're going to support. So can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two aspects to it. I mean, one is, well, I should say three. One, first, you know, if you have a passion for something, you know, in your life, then that's something maybe you want to be supportive of, whether there's a business relationship to that or not. So, you know, if you were deeply concerned about poverty and food, and you want to be engaged in supporting the local food bank, you know, fantastic. And if you happen to run a gas station and your business has nothing to do with food, you know, do the thing you're passionate about. There's no reason not to. You know, another version of this, and this is especially true in smaller business, I mean, there's a level of marketing you kind of hope happens, you know, that you want people to know that you are engaged in your community. And so I think looking for those places where the level of support you can provide will be visible to the people you want it to be visible to might be important. So if, you know, if you feel that, that you know, kids and education are important, you know, find a way to be engaged in that area. You know, it could be as simple as I'm going to, you know, put my corporate name, my company name on the Little League team, and everyone will know that, you know, Honda supports the Little League team, and that's a lot of families, and, you know, okay, that maybe that's the way to go. You know, and then finally, I mean, another way to approach this is to say, you know what, I don't have time, it's not my area of expertise. You know, maybe I can find a way to work with, for example, a local United Way or some other organization whose job is this stuff. You know, I mean, I know where I live, in the Princeton Area Community Foundation. I mean, very easy to go to them and say, look, I want to be supportive in the community. I want people to know I'm supportive of the community. I don't have time to do what you do. Tell me how I, you know, if I write you a check, what happens? Or likewise with the United Way. You know, I'd like to do something that supports the community. I don't have the time. This is what you guys do for a living. You know, tell me how I can engage with you. Or, you know, other social service, you know, other, I mean, not social service organizations, but social clubs. I mean, like, I, you know, in fact, I think we just, you know, the Rotary, I mean, that, you know, that's an organization that does a lot of good in the community. And maybe that's a way for you to do that without necessarily having to write individual checks in places that, you know, that will make you insane after a time. I mean, I've had donors many different places in my career say, I'm going to give you this big check, but please, to God, don't tell anybody. Because they don't want other organizations to know that they're capable of writing a check that size.
Right. Oh, my goodness. You know what? To what you're talking about and what you've everything that you've been talking about for the last 45 minutes has got its own show, literally, for an hour. But honestly, what you just, I mean, I'm talking about like words of wisdom. This is what you have just offered up. Because to me, people out there listening, I think that the regular, like the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, you know, radio station produces the show and streams it. And I know there's at least, you know, a couple hundred people in the immediate community listening to that, to what you're saying. And I think that what you just said, as far as, you know, to guide them to understand that if they have a mission and a passion, it's no different than the organization that's created that mission and passion needs to understand how to operate as a business owner. The person who's the business owner who's being asked of this has to decide what it is that they want to support. And then they are allowed, and it's okay to say, I'm staying in that channel. I mean, that makes total sense, because it does. They can answer that. You know, they could say, this is what I really support. And if you don't know the answer to that, then you go back to the United Way, the community foundations and so on that you're talking about. I don't think a lot of people know that as general knowledge. I think they just get kind of hit up and then they have to make decisions and they feel bad when they say no. And then you're talking about, like you said, the ones that have a truckload of money and want to give it to what they think is important, but they just don't want to be giving it to everybody. Then again, there's a sensitivity to that.
And, you know, I think that, look, there's no shame in telling someone, you know, I have a real, you know, passion for, you know, funding breast cancer research. You know, my mother died of breast cancer. That's where my money goes. I, you know, you guys want to put your poster in my window for the 3 weeks before your show, that's fine. But, you know, but my money goes to an issue that is near and dear to my family. I, you know, there's no shame in saying that. And frankly, you know, as the folks, the more sophisticated folks in the nonprofit world, they'll respect that. I mean, they understand that. You know, I mean, I sit here in Philadelphia. I mean, yes, there are lots of rich people in and around Philadelphia, but many of them have causes for which they're very passionate. Ballet may not be one of them. And you know what? I have to respect that. Doesn't mean I don't have a conversation with them, but when they tell me, you know what, the University of Pennsylvania will get all my money, and you know, and no one else will ever will. Okay, then I'm not going to make that person insane. Why would I do that? And I think even at a small scale, there's no reason you can't have that same conversation.
Well, I love the way you say that too. That there's a certain respect in actually saying no up front and stop. You know, even having someone who is on the recipient side of that funding, perhaps sitting there wondering when there really is no intention. You're better off just saying it's not my cup of tea, like you say, and then people do respect that. Just give an answer. Don't run around, right?
Well, look, I wish I could tell you everyone respects it. One of the challenges, especially with small startups, is we have some people in the nonprofit arena who are very passionate, and maybe are lacking a little bit in the sensitivity to understand that your passion may not be everybody's passion.
Right.
So I'd love to tell you that every one of those conversations was going to be met with, you know, a respectful understanding that maybe you're not interested in my cause. But there will be the outliers who say, I don't care. I still want your money. It'll happen.
That's very
true.
That
is so funny. Oh, my goodness. Wow. It is a whole different world, the nonprofit world. You have such, like, unbelievable expertise. So give us a little hint, because we know we got to go. It's almost the end of the show here. What are you planning on talking about at the Palace on October 8th?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, when we talk about trends, the measurable results issue. I think there is a sense that the world at large thinks that, you know, business people have a better sense of how to save money. And believe me, nonprofits save money better than most anyone I know. So maybe we need to talk a little bit about that, sort of, you know, bust that myth. And I think, you know, we also talked about, you know, PR and marketing. I think how do you, in this new age, how do you tell your story? And, you know, I think, and this is actually very similar in both the commercial and nonprofit world. You know, what is the need of the consumer? Or what is the need of the audience? Or what is the need of the buyer? And sometimes in the nonprofit world, the buyer isn't the same person who receives the services. And so we'll talk a little bit about, you know, who am I marketing what to? Because sometimes it's not the same.
Well, I'm just really looking forward to it. You're just a wealth of information. We wish we could talk to you forever.
Yeah.
But we know you're a busy guy. So thank you.
That's what they tell me. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It's fantastic. And I'm looking forward to speaking at the conference. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of energy, and a lot of information.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. You're going to be sending it out there for sure. And we are actually going to be featuring David tomorrow. Mariah Media is going to have him in our newsletter. If you get it electronically, if you want to, you can go to Mariah Media and sign up for it. It goes out to about 15,000 or so. He's going to be featured. There'll be an archive of this radio station if you want to listen to this program again and learn more about what he's going to be speaking about. And he's also going to be on the panel. So if you have a question in mind that you might want to bring on that day, that's October 8th. You could pick it, you know, register online. David, you take care. Have a nice afternoon.
Thank you so much. You too.
Thanks for being on the show. All right, everybody out there, we're going to let David go. He's got to be on his way out the door there from the Pennsylvania Ballet. And we hope that you are as well. Going to beat the traffic out of here as we are. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Guess where we're going.
All right, we'll see you. We'll talk to you next week. We hope you have a great week. Again, talented people, I'm Jeannie Murphy and Colleen Kelly. If you want to register for the event at the Palace, you can check it out on Eventbrite. Just look up the Palace at Somerset Park. You can look up Steve Kalafer, K-A-L-A-F-E-R, or any of the headliners on the best practices lessons from the leaders. And you can register right there. But space is limited, and it's happening very shortly. So come spend the day with us and have a good time.
You're listening to 100inChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@100in-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy 100in, buy local. Visit www.100inchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
In classic SVU style, it's ripped from the headlines.
Exactly. A wealthy New Yorker that everyone suspects is a serial killer, but can they prove it?
I bet they can.
But first, it's the season premiere of The Mysteries of Laura with Deborah Messing.
Sorry, wrong show.
You're out of control. The premiere of The Mysteries of Laura, followed by the 2-hour premiere of SVU tonight on NBC.
Oh, there's one more thing.
What?
Some followers of Islam were upset when presidential candidate Dr. Ben Carson declared he would not advocate putting a Muslim in the Oval Office. But the comments by Carson on NBC's Meet the Press started a lot of people thinking about that prospect. USA's John Clemens has more.
One has to wonder what would happen if we had a Muslim as president and that person followed Sharia law instead of the Constitution. Would that person take the oath of office on a Quran, or would that person denounce Islamic terrorists? And what opinion would they have regarding Israel? Art Swift, the managing editor of the Gallup poll, says they were surprised that 45% of self-identified Republicans would vote for a Muslim presidential candidate.
Among the Republican Party, 45% said that they would vote for a Muslim candidate, which to me is a bit surprising because you would think, based on a lot of the rhetoric of presidential candidates, that that would be a smaller number.
I'm John Clemens.
This is USA Headline News.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
The Obama administration is expecting Pope Francis to bring up subjects with which it disagrees when he visits the United States this week. Charlie Kupchan of the National Security Council addressed that possibility during a conference call.
We don't know what he's going to say until he says it. And in that respect, we are fully expecting that there will be some messages with which we may respectfully disagree or have differences.
Despite some opposing viewpoints, Kupchan says he believes many of the Pope's messages will actually lend a moral authority to parts of the president's agenda. Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes expressed similar sentiments, saying that there's a host of issues where President Obama and the Pope agree. Rhodes pointed to subjects like climate change, saying that the Pope's position on climate change provides a, quote, moral backdrop to how leaders react to the subject.
Pope has spoken about the need for all of us to meet our responsibility to care for God's creation, and that, I think, provides a moral backdrop to the types of policy decisions that individual leaders will make on climate change.
He says the Pope's moral authority gives backing to some of their policies.
His essential messages will resonate very much with the president's agenda. We are hoping that his moral authority helps us advance many of the items that we take to be very high on our policy agenda. There will be some messages with which we may respectfully disagree or have differences.
For a complete list of events and details, go to worldmeeting2015.org. I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
This is Jeannie Aversa, CRPC, financial advisor at Patton Hiding Associates. Do you have questions about your retirement, like will your money last throughout your lifetime? Will you have enough to live the life you want? And when will you be able to retire? If so, you're not alone. As a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., Patton Hiding Associates can help you find the answers with the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach. We'll work with you one-to-one to understand your goals and discuss the four key areas of retirement, including covering your essentials, lifestyle, protection, and legacy needs. From there, we'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap with clear steps you can take to help you retire on your terms. Call Patton Hiding Associates today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor.
Well, the time is 8:06. It's time for Hunter Chamber Radio Weather. We're at 52 degrees in Flemington. It's clear skies, calm winds, zero chance of precipitation. Today is Wednesday, and it's July. It's July. It's September 23rd. It's the first day of autumn. Plentiful sunshine and a high of 81. How's that for autumnal weather? Winds light and variable. Clear skies and a low of 50. Winds light and variable. And mostly sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 82. Winds northeast at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Partly cloudy and a high of 76 on Friday. Saturday, intervals of clouds and sunshine, a high of 76. Cloudy skies early on Sunday, then partly cloudy in the afternoon, a high around 75. Don't know what happened to all that precipitation they were talking about. Monday the 28th, some sun and increasing clouds during the afternoon, a high of 79. Temperatures in our area, 57 in the county complex, 54 in Tewksbury. It says 49 up in Highbridge, 54 in Phillipsburg, 52 in Frenchtown, 51 in New Hope, and 52 in Ringgos. Good morning, Hunterdon. That's HuntingtonChamberRadio.com.
Darker days are drawing near. The winter winds will be much colder now you're not here. I watch the birds fly south across the autumn sky.
Oh, good morning, Hunter and Big C here, coming live from the Hunter Chamber of Commerce office in Flemington, New Jersey. We're just down the street from the old courthouse, the Union Hotel, the famous Lindbergh Trial. My job to get you out and about on your day, going to work, going to school, running errands. You need to be on the internet, though, because we're over the wire, we're not over the air. We're the only 24-hour talk internet radio station in the nation, produced by a Chamber of Commerce. We're all about Hunterdon County, yeah? I don't know, for many, I would think that this little melancholy, knowing that it's autumn, perhaps I was wishing we went back to July 23rd. I know the Prez, though, he's looking forward to December. He's a snow guy. I think we have to move the Chamber of Commerce up to the North Pole for him. But it is autumn, and some people just love this type of weather. Certainly the temperatures are very nice, pleasant. And the colors, no doubt, are fun, and I do love the football season, but I really don't want to go back into winter. It feels like we just got out of it, but we're here. We're moving on. It is time for us to look at traffic, see what's going on our Hunter County roads. HERTTMA.com sends me my alerts via email. You can get them, too. Just register with them and learn about the highways, the byways, and also the local roads. So here's what we have. Incident on 78 in Reddington. Started at 7 o'clock this morning, eastbound west of exit 24, County Route 523. There was a vehicle fire there. Delays back to exit 16. And now the update as of 722 says that vehicle fire has been cleared. Residual delays back to exit 13. That was as of 722 this morning. So it doesn't sound like all that has been resolved as of yet. It's cleared, but lots of things are affecting all the way back. So if you're going 78, you might want to look for another route. And you know some of those other routes, 173, 22, are all going to be affected somehow, some way. That's Good Morning Hunterdon, Hunterdon Chamber Radio Traffic. Time to look at what is on Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com's schedule for today. I'm on till 10. We'll be talking to Michelle Heide. She's back with us today after speaking with her clients yesterday. And she'll be on 8:30 to talk about the markets. At 8:40, we go a-traveling, and that's with Diane Lane from D&L Travel. She gives us all sorts of insight into vacation locations and great places and great tips and advice for how you should plan your trip. At 10 o'clock, it's Modern Design, and that's with Richard Scuderi. Rich is Maven Hill Interior Design, and he's on twice on Wednesdays. The first hour, 10 to 11, he will have some type of guest to talk about interior design concepts and materials, and he brings all that to you from 10 to 11. At 11 o'clock, we move on to Raising Conscious Kids Radio. That's Kim Pramatic. She has kids just like us. She loves to teach kids, and she loves kids. And she believes that the influencers...
Good afternoon, Hunterdon County. You are joined here today with Tony Page and Kiki Shahani, who is a engineer and consults within the intermodal transportation industry globally. And we're going to be talking a little bit about products, getting them to market, what comes through New Jersey and Hunterdon County in particular. But before we go on to that, I wanted to cover the weather.